This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around New York City, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Gatlin. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Benham Jones at WFUV. Benham, this interview has all of the things that a person could possibly hope for in one interview.
Is that true?
We talk about falling in love. Mm-hmm. We talk about Christian nationalism. We talk about
Lilith Fair,
Taylor Swift, Avril Lavigne. It's a really dynamic and interesting conversation. And I also think it's cool because a lot of the artists that we've had in recently have been names that our listeners are super familiar with. But this is really a new up-and-coming artist. So talk to us about Gatlin. Talk to us about what you learned about Gatlin and this new debut record that she's just released.
Yeah, Gatlin sounds like she's been making music since sort of late 2010s, 2017, 2018, independently releasing some EPs and some singles. Originally an artist from Florida, from the Orlando or Kissimmee, or she's born Orlando where she was raised, been working in LA and London a little bit. This is her debut full length. It's on Dual Tone Records. It's called The Eldest Daughter, and a very kind of full-bodied and consistent tone throughout, and almost a concept like it feels kind of like autofiction in a way, because it's very much reflecting on her past and where she comes from and processing of that, but having some fun with it and fictionalizing and playing with it. And yeah, great voice, very strong rooting in that sort of classic singer-songwriter kind of mid-90s. She seemed in a way, I never want to ask anyone's age, but she said, you know, Sheryl Crow and I forgot who else she mentioned. Sheryl Crow, Shania Twain, who very much were like the women of country when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. But then she said she was been like a hardcore Swiftie, which I kind of am a little bit earlier than that. So Taylor Swift didn't matter to me in a way that it mattered to Gatlin. But it seems like she's just been absorbing music, you know, since she was a young child, and that started with working in the Christian worship bands. But yeah, very a lovely person, a great session, two very full embodied sound, even with it was just her and her guitarist, Josh, and she was triggering some backing tracks and stuff, but very professional and a great voice.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to hear three songs and they're all from the new record. What is the first song that we're going to hear Gatlin play in this session?
The first one we're going to hear is the first one that it opens up the record. It's called Florida Man. Although I do not think it's styled as Florida, comma, man, but that is the wordplay that we get in there because she's never going back to Florida, man. So yeah, new music from Gatlin. Let's get into it. This is Florida Man.
But we're frying in the same sun.
That's Gatlin live in Studio A. Benham Jones sitting down. Thank you so much for being here, Gatlin.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on your brand new record. And that track we just heard is the one that kicks off the album, right?
Track one.
Track number one. I mean, I want to get into like the whole feeling of having your debut record out, but that track in particular, kind of kicking off the record, and I listened just last night, so I know where the record ends, which has its own kind of variable irony to it from saying where we start over there. But can you tell us a little bit about that track, Florida Man?
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny that I made this record in London. I wrote a song called Florida Man in London, but it's kind of this like proclamation of just, you know, I don't live in Florida anymore. And I moved to LA, and it's just kind of like proclaiming myself as, you know, not what I thought I was going to be or my parents wanted me to be, and kind of taking ownership of that. And I don't know. It just feels like a really great album starter.
Yeah, the defiance is very cool. My ex-wife and I used to say that the limits of our dimension or our reality are set by the things we say no to. And I always find
I love that.
It's very interesting to start a record, you know, by saying, I'm actually stepping away from this.
Definitely.
But you do come back at the end of the record.
I come back around.
To Kissimmee, Florida.
Yeah.
And is that where you grew up?
That is where I was born. And then I grew up in Orlando, which is maybe a 30-minute drive. But yeah, I think I had to process a lot of things. I had to go through maybe like saying, I want nothing to do with this, to then be able to come back around and be like, no, wait, I actually loved so much of this, but now it's in my way and as my authentic self. And, you know, I could come back and reclaim it as my own, my version of it.
And so much of the album's artwork, and I was looking last night at some of the music videos too, it's very much steeped in imagery of Florida and kind of the swampland.
Oh, yes.
And that sort of stuff.
Oh, we took a trip to Florida and did all the visuals there.
So you have been back.
So I've been back several times. I think when I wrote that song, I was in a phase of being pretty angry. And I think you have to go through that. I had to move through these emotions. And now, yeah, I was like, well, obviously I am going back to Florida, comma man, because I have played shows there since and did all the visuals. But yeah, all of the images and the places we took photos and videos were places I grew up going to as a kid. And so it felt really empowering to go back to those spaces and make my art there, you know?
And talking about, so the release of this record, it's because you put out singles and EPs done independently on your own. It's your first major label release. The record's going to be on Dual Tone? Or it's on Dual Tone?
Yeah, it's on Dual Tone, indie label, yeah.
Does it feel like an extension of that whole processing of identity or announcing of your own, like reclaiming your identity? Like, I don't even know how to say this, but because it's like you're pushing away from these things in your past, but then you're also acknowledging that it actually is prologue of where you come from and who you are today.
Definitely.
What sort of jumping off from this record, what kind of things are you interested in moving forward towards, you know? Because this record looks very much back behind you.
Yeah, I felt like all the singles and the EPs I had before, a lot of them were love songs or breakup songs, but I had actually never been in love. And so it kind of felt like I needed to go back and I needed to process personally for myself a lot of the way that I grew up and how I got to where I was. And naturally, I was writing about it to help with that processing. And now that I've like moved through with a lot of that, I can kind of go back to writing about whatever is going on in my life. And I've been writing recently a lot of love songs. I like am in my first like serious relationship. And I don't know, it just feels like I had to go back and process all of these things in order to like grow and do anything else. It felt like I couldn't write or do anything else until I had processed all of this.
Yeah, you kind of got to go there, acknowledge it, and then cut the tether to move forward.
Definitely. Definitely.
Congratulations on being in love.
Thank you.
That's a great thing and a great place to work from. There's a couple of love songs on this record as well. One of the most clever is If She Was a Boy.
Yeah.
That is definitely immediately the turn of the phrase is very compelling in the song. Can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Yeah. That one I wrote I was also in London, about to go into a session, and I had packed an old journal, and I was flipping through it the day before and found a journal entry from the first time I had had a crush on a girl. I was 19 years old and hadn't really experienced that before. And I had written in my journal, if she was a boy, I'd be in love. And so we just kind of wrote this song about that perspective of me at 19 being really confused and not really knowing what it meant and being like, well, I can't do anything about it because I was really religious at the time and was still in the South. And so, yeah, it was just kind of writing from 19-year-old brain me about having these feelings and not really knowing what to do with them.
Is that a normal part of your process, using old journals and kind of combing through them for phrases or ideas or fragments?
No, this was the first time. I am like a pretty nostalgic person, so I like looking at old photos and I like, I guess, reading old journals. But that was the first time I had done that. But it felt like I already knew I was writing a lot about growing up and what that was like. So it just felt like a really good fit.
And I'd love to hear the song in a moment, but just while it's on my mind, you've mentioned London a few times, that you made this record in London, but we're talking a lot about Florida. What is the London connection here?
I just love going there. I think I feel very free and kind of out of, you know, my normal elements now that I've been in LA for several years. I think it's good to have a change of state every, you know, few months. I just like to go out there and write, and I have found great collaborators there. So yeah, I think I made two tracks in London from the album, the first two.
That is, so Florida Man and then
If She Was a Boy.
Can we hear that one right now?
Let's do it.
Thank you so much. Live in Studio A, Benham Jones with Gatlin. This is If She Was a Boy.
Touched my hair, said, wanna be chaotic. I'll do my time and pray it all away. She took all my plans and tossed them, drew up all my lines and crossed them. Caution, talking to a guilty conscience. I don't really think I'm seeing straight. If I was born another time, another state, would I be torn between some we love and some we tolerate? She was a boy, I'd be in love, I'd be in love. I'd be in love, I'd be in love, I'd be in love. Maybe it's just cause she's got a British accent. Maybe it's just cause I wanna look like her. Phase, I'll brush it off and I won't think about it. Touch her, how her skin and hair and like wipe on me under. If I was born another time, another state, would I be torn between someone you love and someone you tolerate? I'm too afraid of what you think and who's above. But if she was a boy, I'd be in love. Between someone you love and someone you tolerate, I'm too afraid of what you think and who's above. But if she was a boy, I'd be in love, I'd be in love. I'd be in love, I'd be in love, I'd be in love. I'd be in love, 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 I'd be in
Live in Studio A, Benham Jones, in studio with Gatlin. That was If She Was a Boy. Also want to say you have a collaborator here. We have Josh Halper playing guitar with you.
Yes, we do.
And then you handling all other duties. It's a big sound for two people right now.
We've got some tracks helping us out.
What is the live setup when you are playing on the road right now?
Recently, it's been a three-piece. So normally, I've got a drummer with me, but I'm out here in New York. And so my friend Josh was out here and it was easy. But yeah, when I'm touring, it's normally we've got a drummer and a guitar player and me up there.
Cool. And you're usually playing the acoustic guitar, that kind of thread?
Acoustic or electric. Yeah. I started on piano as a kid, but I've just never, I don't know, with the music that I write, I feel very safe behind a guitar.
For sure. Tell me a little bit, just, you said you started on the piano, you mm-hmm. grew up playing that as a kid. Take me to the start of kind of your musical education and your experience. I'm always curious, especially now in this day and age when kind of the singer-songwriter, it had its boom in the 90s and late 80s and stuff. And now a lot of music is more electronic. But what compelled you to first say that you wanted to write songs in sort of that classical singer-songwriter mode?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's probably a cliche, but Taylor Swift like really did a lot, I think, for young women who wanted to sing. I was like, oh, I can play the guitar and I can write my own songs as well. Yeah, as a kid, my album being called The Eldest Daughter, I was the oldest and I really liked getting attention. So mm-hmm. I was just constantly performing. And so it was a pretty easy transition into grabbing that guitar and writing about my big feelings.
You mentioned when we were talking before you played the last song that you kind of had a very religious upbringing, and that's addressed on the album, and I want to get to that eventually, but I'm wondering about the role of contemporary praise music and Christian worship music and where that is threaded into your musical DNA. Is it something that you feel resentful towards, or is it something that, you know, I don't want to answer the question for you, but I'm just wondering about praise music and how that plays in.
Oh, I think it's beautiful. I think a lot of it is so, I'm like very thankful I grew up, you know, in the worship band and in the church band. So I was performing, I was playing 3-4 times a week. So that was the best practice, you know, a girl could get. And my band in college, you know, we were all ex-worship kids. And I just think in high school, I did write my own songs, but I did always think I was going to be a worship leader. I just think that the music is quite beautiful. And I pulled from that on one of the tracks of the album, kind of about losing, I guess, religion or like the idea of God that I had had in my mind for my entire life, in The Hill, which is
my favorite song on the record.
Oh, thank you.
Without a doubt.
Thank you so much. But the end of that I had written separately from the rest of the song, and it was kind of a worship song about missing this relationship with God that I had my entire life. So yeah, it is, I think, a big influence of like how I've gotten here.
Yeah, and at the end of that track, and maybe we can play it when we are, you know, we're doing some radio magic on this interview, but it is a, if we don't, for everyone listening, it's an a cappella moment, or it starts almost, you're like with a small choir, and then you go fully solo at the end, right? Mm-hmm. The vulnerability there is quite incredible.
Oh, thank you.
And listening through, I really thought that through the whole record, some of my favorite pieces of what is praise and worship music, which are like kind of the pitched high back vocals and the harmonies, those live on the
drenched
eldest,
in reverb.
Those live on The Eldest Daughter for sure. What other music have you been enjoying? So we've been talking about the music of your past, Taylor, praise music, but what do you find yourself, I guess, just not just music, but other art that you've been experiencing that has been compelling to you lately?
I mean, I feel like throughout this process, I was listening to a lot of music that I grew up listening to. So it was a lot of, like, I guess, Nirvana and Radiohead and The Verve, and but then Avril Lavigne and Gwen Stefani and Mazzy Star. I really just love organic instruments, like something you can play with a band, but I guess to modernize it, I have living in LA, I love pop music as well. And so there's a lot of, you know, pop elements in this record as well, because I can't help it. But no, I feel like I was consuming a lot of that, a lot of movies, books. But it was also just kind of really turning back to, okay, since I was a kid, what have I really gravitated towards? And kind of returning to that and having a lot of nostalgia just kind of fester within myself.
Just to, if you could rattle off a couple, just because I'm always curious about the other media that influences the music that that someone ends up making. But any one thing you read or a film you saw that you felt kind of has a little bit of the same stuff as The Eldest Daughter?
I mean, Sheryl Crow, I think, was also a pretty big influence in it. Just kind of her aesthetic and her as a person and the music in general. That she was, you know, her and Shania Twain were kind of like the women of country while I was a kid and growing up. So I think definitely her music and Michelle Branch. I don't know. There were just so many artists. And I think like female singer-songwriters specifically of that time, I was just really inspired by. And they were like people I could look up to. So yeah, I kept going back to that.
It's been a boom in the singer-songwriter world for there a lot of female artists that are kind of self-actualizing. And we've seen with like the Phoebe Bridgers and these small tours that are popping up. Lilith Fair is having its own moment in the sun right now, I guess, getting HBO documentary on Lilith Fair.
I'm so excited.
Contemporary artists who you love or people, you said you have a crew that you write with in London. I always love if you can give a shout to anyone.
Yeah, Chloe Kramer is amazing. She does Japanese house, produces for them as well, or her. And Charlie Hugel is in London, and he is quite amazing. He's worked on Florence and the Machine, who another just
queen,
absolute queen. I listen to a lot of Big Thief and Adrian Linker and Slow Pulp. And I don't know, I think it's across the board, you know, writing the pop line, the indie line, the rock world. I think, yeah, there's just a lot of good music out there, right? There's a lot of...
Always, yeah. That's the joke. At any given moment in time, someone's making music that's going to blow our mind. Can you tell us a little bit about, I guess, the record as a whole, conceptually, being The Eldest Daughter? Is that a... Is that kind of a spiritual identity? Or are you truly the eldest daughter in the
family? I am truly the eldest daughter, but I guess also spiritually the eldest daughter. All the stereotypes really kind of come out in me. And yeah, it just felt like the most identifying thing. All of the themes of the record always point back to, oh, this kind of goes back to family dynamics and you being the oldest and having all of this pressure and being a perfectionist and being a protector. So... yeah, it just felt like the thing it was all pointing towards.
Not to ask like a sensitive question, but has your family heard the record? Are you in touch with your family and stuff like that?
Yeah, they have. They have. I actually was staying at their house while we were filming a lot of the visuals. Yeah, I think that they have recognized like this is part of my story and something, you know, I feel the need to talk about and share. And I think that, I don't know, dynamics shift and grow and change. And there are different phases of relationship. But, you know, I think like through this, we found a lot of healing, you know, so.
And are you a pastor's kid or you just grew up in the church?
Just grew up in the church. I was honestly, I think it felt a very culturally thing for my family. You know, we're like in this evangelical Christian community. Like my grandparents are very religious, but I kind of took charge in middle school and high school. I was the one who was trying to get everyone to go to church 3-4 times a week. I just really, really...
That's very eldest daughter.
Yeah. Vibes. I was like, and we're waking up and we're going to church now, 8 a.m. Let's go.
As someone who can kind of be a child of both worlds, coming from the evangelical Christian background, a queer artist who is out and singing about it, to a younger audience that is both kind of the singer-songwriter set and also the pop set. And this is like a huge question, but kind of wondering about responsibility in terms of threading that narrative together, especially in a country that is so just desperately divided right now, with Christian nationalism rising and kind of the Christian identity being distorted at the highest level of politics.
Yeah, definitely.
And queer people under attack. Just if you could talk a little bit about the role that the music plays for you in translating that message and what the wider role you think of music is in the cultural landscape.
Yeah, definitely. I think it on the album, I call out some of Christian nationalism, specifically, I think, like MAGA Christianity and the hypocrisy in that. Yeah, it's music can be used to protest. And I think like that was my way of saying, this is who I am and this is what I believe in, and I'm not going to be quiet about it anymore. And it felt extremely empowering. And, you know, it can upset people, but, you know, my family specifically, but I think that it is important. And I think that music is such a tool for that. It's been cool now, the album being out, I think a lot of young queer people in the South or honestly wherever have just really sent me messages over the internet, because I haven't played shows quite yet. But, you know, even just that over the internet, it has felt like very connecting, and they feel very seen. And then I get to feel seen through them being seen. And it's felt very important.
It really feels like it has potential to be very powerful for young Florida queers to hear this record, because in a way, though it is defiant, kind of against the past, it's also a very welcoming sound to the record. So it's kind of it's at least for me, when I listened, it had the feeling of inclusion rather than sort of exclusion. So bravo and good for you on that. One last thing. You mentioned Taylor Swift earlier, and then when we were talking a little bit before we got on mic, you had mentioned the kind of weird synchronicity with Taylor's new record and this record coming out on the same day. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And I understand that she's a huge influence on yours.
Yeah, well, no, it is. It's I've like been a Swiftie.
You can say it.
Yeah. Well, since I was so young, and she was like such an influence growing up. And so I had a song a few years ago that like kind of Swifties found and I felt very supported by. And then now this record coming out, this album came out the same day that Life of a Showgirl, her new album, did. And her track 5 was called Eldest Daughter. And I just, it was kind of crazy. And I got to have, you know, bring in a lot of Swifties from that as well, just because of the synchronicity of that. And the, you know, it was very, woo.
Can we hear another track?
Let's do it.
Cool. What have you got for us?
I've got Man of the House.
All right. This has been Benham Jones live in Studio A with Gatlin. Thank you so much for joining me. Live in Studio A, this is Man of the House.
My ex got married last weekend. I don't even want to be someone's wife, but I still get sick when it sinks in. I'm always the one.
That was Gatlin performing an In Conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Gatlin for joining us in our studio and to Dual Tone Records. Thanks to our FUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Nadia Garriga. Our WFUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producer for this episode was Gwen Taylor. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV live sessions on WFUV.org. FUV live sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Benham Jones.